Welcome to Galactic Chat, the podcast that explores the people that make up and influence the Australian speculative fiction scene. My name's Mark Webb, and I'm joined today by Alex Adsett, agent extraordinaire and one of the go-to people for understanding just what's going on in Australian SF. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thank you very much. Thanks for a great intro.
Before we get to your current activities, I know a lot of our listeners would love to hear about the making of a literary agent. When doing my highly sophisticated research in preparation for this podcast, which may or may not involve looking at your website, I saw that your career leading up to establishing your company involved a mixture of roles across bookselling and publishing. Can you tell us a little bit about your professional history?
Absolutely. I think growing up, I was just a massive reader. Just love that was my life. And when I got to university and then someone just, as a throwaway comment, mentioned that there was this industry out there called publishing, my little heart just leaped with joy. And I was like, I needed to find a way to get into this industry. So I started in bookselling at Pulp Fiction, a crime and science fiction bookseller in Brisbane, which was just my dream job when I was all through university. And then took myself off to London to try to get into publishing, and was lucky enough eventually to get into Simon & Schuster there. And I was a little bit involved in publishing all the Buffy and Star Trek books that were very big at the time, and which was just fantastic. And then moved back to Australia and got a job at Penguin in the Rights and Contracts Department, which again was just a dream job for me. And then missed the sunshine of Queensland too much and set up my own business so that I could live in Queensland where I wanted to live and work in publishing, which was the industry I loved.
With the benefit of hindsight, are there any other aspects of the writing publishing world that you wish you'd had a chance to work in before you started your own firm?
It would have been nice, I think, to have worked in an agency with other agents, because I've worked on the publishing side of things, so I know how a publisher works, and I saw what agents did from that side of the fence. And I think working in bookselling has been invaluable introduction to the industry. But there are some times that I sort of wonder what a properly trained agent would do. And then I actually talk to other agents, and I don't think there is actually a definition of a properly trained agent. But I sometimes wonder, we do things differently.
Excellent. Well, you started Alex Adsett Publishing Services as a vehicle for being an independent consultant in the publishing game. What is an independent consultant in the publishing game?
I think anyone almost could set up a shingle and call themselves a consultant. But the way I set it up, my expertise is contracts and copyright from a publishing point of view, not necessarily the legal point of view. And I really did actually see a gap in the market, and there were so many authors, friends and just authors that I met, who felt like they needed to have an agent and would get themselves a publishing deal, which is, I think, the hardest thing to do, and then run around looking for an agent because they needed help negotiating the contract. So I sort of put up my hand and said, well, I can help negotiate the contract for you. I can help make sure you're not being ripped off. And that's where my business started. So that's what I was really doing. Because I know the ins and outs of the business, I know what a good deal looks like and what a bad deal looks like, what publishers should be offering and what they're sometimes a bit sneaky about. I kind of feel the middle ground between authors and publishers is how I see myself. Like, I don't try to go out and go all in for the author in terms of shutting down the publisher, but I also don't want the publisher just running roughshod over the author.
Well, that sounds like a very valuable service. You said part of the reason for setting up on your own was to get back to Queensland. Were there any other reasons that went into the decision to strike out on your own rather than join with the existing firm? Or do firms exist in that kind of space?
Well, certainly not up in Queensland. Yeah. We've only got one amazingly brilliant publisher up in Queensland, and that's University of Queensland Press. And I kept hoping they'd buy me, and no one ever left. So, you can only hope someone leaves for so long. I wanted to branch out on my own in terms of trying to find a new direction. But I love working at publishing companies. They're filled with people who love books, who love talking about books, who love arguing about books, and that's a dream place for me to work. So if I ever got offered, if I'd been offered a job in a publishing company again at that time when I was looking to leave Penguin, I probably would have jumped at the chance. But then I've got ethical issues about living in Sydney, and, you know, and I was sick of the rain in Melbourne, so I was running out of places to live.
Fair enough. Well, speaking as someone that lives in Sydney, I can understand your ethical quandary.
fine. Brisbane's better.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, you run sessions and you sit on panels at conventions where you discuss, you know, contracts, digital publishing, issues of copyright. What are your top couple of free bits of advice that you'd offer to authors who haven't given the business side of writing much thought?
I always read the contract is one thing. Don't just assume that there's a standard for everybody and that that's what you're being offered, because there isn't. Never, ever be afraid to ask questions. If a publisher turns around and drops the offer because you're asking questions, that is a dodgy publisher. I mean, sure, if you're still asking questions after 4 months, then maybe the publisher's going to get fed up with you. But the first round of questions and negotiations are absolutely standard, so don't feel afraid to do that. And the other sort of a sneaky one, one is don't be afraid to take chances, but always make sure there's an exit clause. That if you're going to sign up with a publisher that's brand new and nobody's ever heard of before, that might be fine, but always do your research. But always make sure that there's a way for the rights in your book to come back to you eventually. And that's my deal breaker, is the reversion clause.
Is that,
does that even make sense?
I get
caught up in contracts, and I'm very enthusiastic about them. So I understand that not everyone shares my passion.
That's fair enough. I mean, are you finding with the advent of e-books and the like that things like reversion clauses are probably even more important than they used to be?
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is me getting up on my little soapbox for a bit. But in the olden days, before e-books, a reversion clause would say that when the book was out of print, the author would get the rights back. But with e-books and with print on demand, a book is never going to be out of print and not available anymore. It's just almost not possible. So those reversion clauses are more important than ever, and they really have to change to say that the rights revert to the author when the book's no longer selling a certain amount of copies. And most publishers are happy to make that change, but they haven't actually changed their template, so you really have to remember to call them on it. Well, they're quite happy to change it when you do call them, but you've just got to remember to ask that question.
And, I mean, is the kind of data available to authors that allow them to know when something's not selling and when it is selling?
Well, every publisher should be giving authors royalty statements at regular intervals, at least every 6 months. So, yes, that should show when a book has stopped selling. Every 6 months you get a report. And if your publisher's not giving you a report, then, again, that's a cause for alarm and a reason to start asking questions.
Excellent. I mean, you branched out into literary agency a couple of years back. What made you decide to expand in that way?
Well, I always sort of said that when the right manuscript came along, I'd make that jump into being a traditional agent. And I love books. And one of the things I miss about book selling is somebody walking in the door and saying, "What can you recommend me to read?" And if you ask that question of almost any bookseller, their eyes will light up and there's grin will appear on their face and they won't stop talking for the next 40 minutes. And I missed that. So becoming an agent was really my way of finding manuscripts that I just wanted to shout about from the rooftops and tell everyone who was unfortunate enough to ask me what I was reading at the moment and tell them about it and tell them how amazing these books are. And that's, I guess, I wanted to put all of that passion and enthusiasm into something that other people would maybe want to talk to me about in a way that they just don't with contracts and copyright. I don't know why they don't want to talk to me about copyright.
So I'm taking from that you just wanted to be more popular at parties.
Yeah, no, actually I'm not. Most normal people don't like talking about books 24 hours a day. I don't understand it.
People are weird.
I know. See, book people people are a special breed.
Exactly. I've heard you've made the quite brave marketing move of telling authors they don't always need an agent. For many authors, getting an agent is one of those holy grails of a writing career. Why warn people away?
Well, I guess one is possibly I'm so nervous about doing this agency thing that I don't want to take anyone out on the false pretenses. It's possibly a big part of it. But no, the reality is, I see an agent's role as doing three main things, and if an author is able to do those three things themselves, then an author should. And the first is getting yourself the publishing deal in the first place. So if an author's already done that on their own, then that's the biggest step. The next is negotiating the contract, which I already do on a freelance basis, but also the Australian Society of Authors negotiates contracts for you, or a good publishing lawyer will negotiate a contract for you. So authors can pay people to do that step as well. And then the third thing an agent does is manage an author's overall career. So some authors love their agent and have a wonderful working relationship with their agent and never want to worry about the business of publishing, they just want to get on and write, which I absolutely respect, and that's one of the reasons I love authors. But if there are also authors that love negotiating for themselves and looking at the industry and networking, and those are the kind of authors that don't need an agent at all and are quite happily going on their merry way without one.
So what kind of qualities do you think makes a good agent?
Oh, I don't know. I think enthusiasm is important. I'm going to put that one there. Stubbornness, I'm finding, which I'm good with stubbornness because it's a lot of persistence and there's a lot of knockbacks and a lot of rejection. And particularly in the first few months of me being an agent, some of my authors were taking the rejections better than I was. So I was, you know, because it's a lot more emotionally draining than I ever thought it would be. So I guess there's a strong need to have, to be able to pick yourself up and dust yourself off and just go back into it the next morning.
Excellent.
And I guess that's the emotional traits. I guess the knowledge that you need. While there's no degree in being an agent and there's no bit of paper that you can get, I think what is absolutely vital is knowing the industry and knowing the publishers, knowing who's friends with who, knowing who's just bought something and is not going to want to look at it again for another 12 months. So while anyone can just put their hand up and say, yes, I'm an agent, without that background knowledge, you're not going to get very far.
So how do you keep yourself up to date with what's going on in the industry? How do you keep that side of your skill set current?
Twitter is a big thing for me. I couldn't do what I do from Brisbane without Twitter. I'm completely addicted to it and I love it to pieces. But also I tend to fly down for a lot of conferences. I fly down to Sydney, Melbourne, and there's events happening in London and New York and all over the world, but you need to stay abreast of and you need to know people to get the good gossip, I guess. But they're the kind of things that you need to pay attention to. A lot of article reading. But I don't know. For me, I get so much information from Twitter and from people I know and reading between the lines sometimes as well.
Yeah, of course. What kind of conventions do you attend?
Well, in Australia mostly, which is where I've been focusing the last few years, there's a lot of publishing conventions at the Writers' Festival, so Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney Writers' Festivals, the Small Press Network, which I'm involved with, which I love, but then also all of the science fiction fantasy conventions, Conflux, Continuum, GenreCon, are just brilliant fun. And the highlight of my year is the Romance Writers Convention, which is just one of the best ways to meet people and see what's happening in the industry.
Yes, I've heard the Romance Writers put on a very professional conference and probably much better organised than most. How's your experience of it been?
Absolutely, it is. Because I come from a science fiction fantasy background, people used to say to me, the only people nicer than the science fiction fantasy people are the romance people. And that was absolutely true. My first romance convention is just like a big warm hug. Everyone there was just fabulous. But also really switched on about the industry. And really focused on making writing a career. And not in a way that forgets why you're doing it, like a love of writing, but using that love of writing and actually turning it into something that you can build a career on. So I would say any science fiction and fantasy writer or crime writer that wants to learn about that, go along to the romance convention every year, because the writing workshops can absolutely be applied to everything, and it's such an invaluable way of learning more about the craft of writing.
Fantastic. Well, you represent over a dozen authors, ranging from well-established names through to newly emerging authors without a sale to their name yet. Without giving out any trade secrets, can you tell us a bit about the criteria you use to select an author or a manuscript? Is it just the caliber of their work, or do you make any assessment of their personal characteristics?
I've got to say I've not been very strategic in a way, because I am just taking on manuscripts that I love. So one of the hardest things to sell at the moment is dystopian novels, and that's one of my favourite genres. Urban fantasy is one of my favourite genres, and that's really hard to sell at the moment. So I'm looking for manuscripts that I love. And if I meet the author and I get on with the author really well, then that's an absolute bonus. I don't think I'd ever turn down a fabulous manuscript because I didn't click with the author, but I guess sometimes there is that borderline if the author, because, you know, there's also crazy, which I see is very much a good thing, and then there's crazy, which maybe not so much a good thing. So if you've got a crazy and a mediocre manuscript, then I'd maybe not take it on, but I don't know. Yeah, so it counts, and what you do want is an author you can work with. But really, for me, the absolute thing that is key is a brilliant manuscript.
Yeah. And do you think publishers are looking at things like, the marketability of the author as a person as well as manuscripts when they're making decisions, or are they focused pretty much on manuscript only as well?
Oh, it's tough, and it depends on the publisher as well. It all does play into the mix. Because, again, no publisher is going to turn down an absolutely fabulous manuscript that they think is a work of genius. So that author could be, you know, a hermit locked away in a garret or fabulous social media presence. The more popular and the more platform an author has, the more it helps, certainly. And if you've got two equal manuscripts there, the one with a very saleable author with a strong media platform would probably get it over the line. But key to it all is a brilliant manuscript.
And there's a lot of people talk about authors need to be more involved in marketing themselves these days. Do you find authors are ready? Your authors are ready for that side of the business, the self marketing and the marketing beyond that the publisher does?
I think yes, many of the authors I work with do know that and are really good at it as well. It is becoming more and more important because, I see some authors get a little upset that publishers are expecting them to do this, but I sort of see it more as it's a tough market. It's a tough market for everyone. So it's not that the publisher is saying you must do this to an author. It's saying to the author, we have to all pull in together to make this work, and are you with us? So it's more of a team effort, certainly. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You could have absolutely everything go right, and brilliant media, publicity campaign, and a brilliant book, a brilliant package, and it still might not take off. So you kind of have to look at it and go, well, I think we still have to do everything we can, pull out all the stops, because you never know what's going to push something over the line.
Excellent. I mean, you don't accept open submissions, but you're very active on the convention circuit and you participate in things like pitching sessions. Why that method of evaluating potential authors? Or do you use other methods of coming across manuscripts?
I'll let you in on a secret. We're never actually closed the manuscript submissions. We just closed our submissions to people that we didn't know or didn't come to us via recommendation. So I was working on the theory that so many manuscripts were finding me through being at conventions and pitching and just talking to people at the bar and talking to other authors, that I was being overwhelmed, and I'm still being overwhelmed with manuscripts, that opening it up to people on the internet who didn't actually know me personally or have a connection was just too much. So if someone can't find a way to me, I would be very surprised, because I make myself pretty accessible. It also, because I'm so specialised as an agent, really looking for genre fiction only, I want to, you know, people I meet tend to really get that and have a passion for the genres as well, whereas people just randomly sending out submissions online don't always get that I'm a specialist agent.
So you do, you have received sort of things outside genre and the like when people are almost cold calling.
Absolutely. And sometimes they don't even change their submission process for agent to agent. They're just like, they address it to dear agent. And you're like, oh, you know, try.
That does seem a little lazy.
And then you get the manuscripts about, you know, we're all aliens and, you know, we're all about to get abducted, or, you know, and on stuff like, this isn't genre fiction. This is someone's personal belief system, but it's not necessarily genre fiction. And that distinction as well, I think, really comes through when you meet people face to face, not necessarily just online.
So you mentioned we've talked about the speculative fiction convention circuit before. Do you find that a particularly vibrant sort of community in Australia?
Absolutely. We have just some amazing authors and such an amazing community that I'm just sort of proud to be part of it in my little way. I mean, I think science fiction fantasy people have the best costume parties. I think we have the best discos. And some really good panels, like really fun, exciting, interesting panels that really look at the genre and the publishing industry in new ways.
How do you think the speculative fiction community in Australia has changed over the time where you've been dealing with and representing authors?
I think, like all the genre industries, actually it's changed because of the rise in self-publishing and digital-only publishing. So even though the number of publishers who publish genre in Australia, not all genres, but science fiction, fantasy in Australia in print, has really shrunk, the actual avenues for people writing in that genre to publish has grown because of digital and self-publishing. So I think there's excitement there. There's this feeling of, oh, we're not just this tiny little ghetto and one person might get published every year. It's, hey, we're all in this. We're all working to make the best work possible. And at the end of that, we've got a chance of finding readers. So I think there's a real vibrancy to it at the moment.
I mean, I noticed one of your authors, Alan Baxter, is having sort of three books published by Voyager Australia in 3 months over July, August and September this year. 2014, for those of you that are living in the future. This seems like an unusually quick release schedule. Are you finding publishers are experimenting with different publication and marketing techniques in response to some of that, you know, the rise of the internet and e-books?
Yes, and that's a really exciting thing with Alan's books, that they've come out so quickly because, well, for a number of reasons. One is that The series was ready to go. We didn't want to wait. We wanted people to have it there really quickly and build momentum on it. And the other is some people actually won't pick up a series until it's finished. And that's almost the George R. R. Martin effect. Like, you don't want to start a series and then think, oh, I'm not actually going to be able to read the final book for 15 years kind of thing. So there really is a movement to only pick up books where the series is done. And the other is that with self-publishing and the authors writing in that sphere, there really is a push to get books out very quickly for the fans. So it's almost changing the expectations of readers that when they've read one book, that the next book is available, then the next book, then the next book. So part of it was experimenting with getting the series out there and seeing what would happen with it.
And you've also got Tricia Sullivan's Shadow Boxer coming out for a global release with Solaris and Ravenstone. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, this is I'm very excited about this because, well, Tricia Sullivan is an American author who lives in the UK, and she won the Arthur C. Clarke Award a few years ago. And at the time she was looking for a new agent, the wonderful author Marianne DePierre put her on to me. And she was being wooed by a UK agent and wooed by a US agent. And I don't know why she picked me. I still don't, because I loved Shadowbox so much. I was reading this manuscript. I actually missed my stop on the train. I was so excited about it. And I think it was that kind of rapid enthusiasm that possibly got her to pick me. And it's so hard to find a home for young adult fiction at the moment. And Trisha's known for her adult science fiction. So I don't know, I just kept trying and kept trying because I loved this book so much, and then found John at Ravenstone, who was starting this new imprint, who loves this book as much as I do, and we're just so excited to have it coming out next month. So everybody keep an eye out for Shadow Boxer.
Fantastic. And it's coming out in Australia as well as part of the global...
It's coming out in Australia as e-book, but not actually in print yet, because... But we'll see what we can do and keep an eye out for it at specialist science fiction bookstores.
Fantastic.
And a big push in the UK and US, which is very exciting.
Oh, that'd be exciting. And do you, many of your authors, do you end up with global contracts for many of your authors, or is it primarily Australian contracts?
Well, it actually depends on the authors. So when you're signing, I've got three print deals of my, I think, 14 authors.
Mm.
Three are print deals, and I think another five are ebook digital deals.
Mm.
So digital pretty much has to be global. It's almost the only way you can do it. At the moment, we've split the rights. So Alan Bax's books are available in Australia and New Zealand only, and we're still looking for US and UK homes for them. My crime series, Facing the Eight, that's available in Australia and New Zealand, and we're looking for a UK deal with that. And then Tricia Sullivan's books the other way. It's actually got a deal in the UK and US and not Australia. So that's the sort of the glorious thing about contracts, is they can be split any which way depending on what the publisher's offering and who the publisher is as well, because I don't want to give the rights necessarily, all of the rights in the world, to a publisher that may not use them when I can do a better job myself trying to find a home for them overseas.
Do you find any limitations from being based out of Australia when you're searching for those overseas deals, or has the internet been the great leveller?
Internet definitely has been the great leveller. There is that, if I need to get myself out more. So my partner and colleague Paul Andymore went to the World Fantasy Con in Brighton last year, and you know, just networked the hell out of it. Met so many UK publishers, and there's nothing actually makes up. So no matter how many emails you send, nothing makes up for a face-to-face meeting. And it's really so that even just doing one of those a year means you're part of that community. They know who you are, and then the emails just flow after that. So there's that slight impediment being over in Australia, not being able to go to those cons. Every year, but at the same time, if you do just make the effort to get over, it all flows from there.
I mean, you're known for having your finger on the pulse of the contractual implications for authors with e-books and self-publishing and sort of being around as well as traditional publishing. Now, what kind of things do you think people should be on the lookout for? We talked about reversion clauses before. Is there anything else you think people should be looking out for these days?
Oh, I guess it does come down to one of the key things I'm noticing is it's very easy for anyone to set up and call themselves a publisher. In the same way it's very easy for anybody to self-publish. So if you're signing with a digital publisher or anyone who's calling themselves a publisher, make sure they're actually able to do the job they say they can do. Make sure they actually have more experience than you do, sort of thing. And that comes down to just research, because that could actually, you could have the best contract in the world, but if the company you're signing up to is hopeless or dodgy or, you know, trying to walk off with your rights, then having the best bit of paper in the world won't help you. So I think it just comes with doing research, talk to other authors and keep your wits about you.
So what's your sense of the Australian speculative fiction scene at the moment? Are there any trends or areas of particular interest to you that you're keeping an eye on?
I'm keeping an eye on, everything good that comes my way. that I can. There's Australians seem to write a lot of the new weird, sort of in that kind of nasal vein of writing, which isn't my favourite genre, but I'm seeing an awful lot of it come through at the moment, and some of it is just brilliant, like so well written. What I'd really like to see is a really good science fiction, classic science fiction. But I don't know, I just think there's such an array of talent here that, and we've just got such a close-knit writing community as well, that people get on, they support each other. Because possibly we are so far away from everyone else, there's a real camaraderie, which I don't think the rest of the world necessarily has.
Do you think sometimes the Australian scene's a little bit too small from that perspective? I've heard a bit of commentary recently about reviews of books and perhaps people not wanting to offend each other because the community's a little bit too close-knit. Do you think that ever comes into play?
Well, I do, but I think that's true of everywhere. I mean, I am terrified. I would not do an honest bad review in anywhere in the world, though, because it is even... you know, science fiction and fantasy community of the world is quite small. And I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to hurt anybody. So I'm actually a fan of that. I think there's a push now to do anonymous reviews because sometimes that is the only way to possibly get an honest bad review out there. But at the same time, when I am raving about something in a good way, that's absolutely honest. And I think every time anyone starts raving about a book in a good way, there's a real honesty there. It's the ones that people are possibly a little quiet about. maybe they're trying to be quiet not to offend.
So you've mentioned that you think dystopia or young adult dystopia is probably a bit quiet at the moment. You'd like to see some science fiction, urban fantasy is dead. Are there any other sub-genres that you think are gaining in popularity at the moment?
Oh, I don't know. All the publishers I talk to at the moment, the mainstream publishers, all want more John Green and contemporary, and I'm like, oh, I don't... too contemporary. I want werewolves. I want vampires. I don't know. It's hard to pick trends. And by the time you actually get a trend, you don't want to be writing for it because then you'll have missed the boat. So it's very hard to actually point to something and say, do this or don't do that. And even if your heart is telling you to write a dystopian, write that damn book anyway, and if now's not the right time to publish it, put it in the bottom drawer for a few years because it's so cyclical, it'll just come back into fashion again and you'll have the perfect manuscript ready to go.
So with all the changes in the industry over the last 10 years, and the jury still seems to be out a little bit on how things are going to play out and what kind of business models will work and what won't. Do you have any predictions, anything you dare put on podcast that the way you think it's going to run through?
Oh, I think self-publishing is going to continue to grow. I think it's already got so much legitimacy behind it that's only going to continue to grow. If you do it properly, it's very easy to self-publish badly. It's very, very hard to self-publish properly. I think publishers are going to continue doing what they're doing at the moment, which is cherry-picking the very best of self-published books, which takes some of the guesswork out of it for the publishers. But then I would love to see more of the little publishers starting up in the science fiction fantasy space, like Solaris and Ravenstone and Angry Robot and publishers like that, really keep growing and take chances on new works and new exciting directions in the genre, because there's so much out there that deserves to find readers.
Yeah, publishers, I've been watching the rise of some of the smaller publishers with some interest. It seems to me that they're almost making a virtue of gatekeeping and taste setting, if that makes sense. Do you see some of the smaller people trying to differentiate themselves in that kind of way?
Yes, publishers? But yeah. I think there's the smaller publishers that begin to get a reputation for doing quality work or doing work of a certain kind, that they build up a loyal following who will then start to buy everything from that publisher just because it's coming out from that publisher. And that's something that smaller independent publishers have the luxury of doing. And I think that is just fantastic. It's in many ways, that's going to become more and more important to the industry. So with, yes, I think indie publishers and those small publishers that are setting up, like Angry Robot and Solaris and Ravenstone, and even ones that are just branching out in this area, like Head of Zeus and Joe Fletcher Publishing, these are wonderful publishers who are building this really strong following of people who will buy almost anything from them because they trust the judgment there. And the new way of publishing or people finding books is becoming more and more important. Mm-hmm. Because if you wanted to read from now until forever for free, there's enough on the internet for you to do that,
mm-hmm.
and not to mention libraries. So we're being inundated with stuff all the time, and the way people find out the right book for them at the right moment is becoming more and more important.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's from a publisher or word of mouth from a friend or bloggers, and bloggers and book reviewers just becoming more and more important. A good review from the right blogger is worth its weight in gold.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is sort of the new frontier of publishing is blogging and how people find the right book.
Well, I mean, that's I think that's having more and more of an impact as time goes on. I mean, are there any writers you think are producing interesting work at the moment, or publishers that are publishing interesting things at the moment? Is there anyone you think's been quite exciting in the field?
Yeah, well, some of the publishers I'm most excited to work with here in Australia. Momentum Publishing, which is a digital imprint of Macmillan, and Escape, which is the digital imprint of Harlequin. Now, they're both doing such exciting stuff, and they're really actually doing an awful lot of science fiction and fantasy. So in Australia, to get, if you want a foot in the door, they're two really good places to start.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing stuff that's just fun. But it goes back to that, one of the reasons I joined the publishing industry in the first place, which is, you know, publishing books that you read and love and want to share with the world. And so I love being able to work with them. There's an awful lot of good stuff coming out of Tor and Orbit in the UK, which is very exciting to see. Well, in terms of authors, there's Trent Jamison, who's a fabulous Brisbane author.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing some very exciting stuff. And Trent's a friend, but I also just, I'm a huge fangirl about his work. and then I'm working not only with Tricia Sullivan, who's a legend in science fiction, but Kylie Chan, who's one of Australia's best-selling fantasy authors. Mm-hmm. And the Western Asian fusion kung fu gods and demons books and hurts that she does, I love. So, you know, it's just so exciting to work with authors that you love and that you've been reading for years anyway, and suddenly you have this moment of turning around going, oh my God, I'm working with these people.
Is there anything, we've talked about Trisha and we talked about Alan, but is there anything else coming up from from either you or your authors that you'd like to talk about?
No, not yet. Nothing that I can reveal. It's all still very super secret squirrel. Not at the moment. I don't know. I just watch this space.
Fantastic. You serve on a variety of boards and sort of management committees, including things like the Queensland Writers' Centre and the Small Press Network. What attracts you to those kind of roles?
Oh, mostly, I think my massive desire to be part of everything. And, I just like being involved with things. So being on the board of the Queensland Writers' Centre is hugely satisfying because I think, as I said before, I missed Queensland when I wasn't here. And the whole time I was in Melbourne, I was hearing about the vibrant writing scene in Brisbane, and I couldn't wait to get back to that and be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then being on the board of the Small Press Network, which is mostly based in Melbourne, so it's teleconferencing in for board meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But I very much believe that small press are the future of publishing in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about before, with building lists and curating the quality of a list of great work, that's where the small presses are really coming into their own and being part of that. And using my copyright and contract knowledge and my knowledge of the publishing industry to help the small press grow as a network, I love being, helping grow something that I feel so passionately about.
Well, I'm all out of questions, and Sean, our fearless leader, gets cranky with me when I make the interviews too long. So I think that means we're getting back to the end of this episode of Get the Galactic Chat. Thanks very much for your time today, Alex.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure. I'm glad we had this chat, and thanks for some really good questions.
No problems. So Alex's website, or the Alex Adsett Publishing Services website, is an excellent source of news and materials related to the management of literary contracts in Australia, and the website can be found at alexadsett.com.au, and I'll put links in the show notes. That's it for this edition of Galactic Chat. Thanks for listening, and make sure you tune in next time.